Possible in part by Strawberry Fields on West Springfield Avenue in downtown Urbana. Strawberry Fields provides a wide assortment of natural foods, vitamins, bulk herbs, fresh breads, and produce. The Strawberry Fields Cafe, looking out on Springfield Avenue, features expanded seating for the deli and coffee bar. WILO programming is made possible by Columbia Street Roastery, offering over 30 varieties and blends of whole bean or ground coffee at 24 East Columbia in Champaign. Coffee, tea, and chai are available from their retail store, in local restaurants, and through Columbia Street Roastery's coffee service. More information is available at 352-9713.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Photographer David Plowden is our guest today. He's been recording the American landscape for 40-plus years, and over the years he's seen dramatic changes in the country's small towns, farms, and city neighborhoods. His latest book, A Handful of Dust, Photographs of Disappearing America, is an elegy for our changing landscape. In the late 1980s and early 90s, Plowden traveled across Iowa, photographing its farming communities. But upon his return not too many years later, he was stunned to find how much the landscape had changed and how quickly it had changed. In the introduction to A Handful of Dust, Plowden says he once knew the territory like the back of his hand. No longer. Iowa, of course, is not alone. There are photographs here from across the Midwest, the East, and the West. There are photographs from Illinois, Mansfield, Piper City, Logan County, Livingston County, Peoria County, Rock Island, Quincy, and Chicago. Listeners, I invite your telephone calls this afternoon for David Plowden. What changes have you seen in the landscape? What do you feel most acutely when you return to a place you knew well but haven't seen for a while? What shocks? What pleases? We look forward to hearing from you this afternoon. You can join us with a telephone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. David Plowden, award-winning photographer. His latest book, A Handful of Dust, Photographs of Disappearing America, is published by W.W. Norton. David Plowden, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Well, thank you for asking me.
Oh, my pleasure. You grew up in Vermont. You went to Yale. So when and how did you begin your appreciation for the landscape of the Midwest?
Well, I think I always, growing up in New York and Vermont, where essentially there was no horizon, and the sun would go down in the afternoon at 4 o'clock behind the hills, and in New York behind the buildings, I longed to see the sky, to have some sense of space. And as a kid, I used to take the trains back and forth across the country a lot. Mm. And I fell in love with this country. And after I went to Yale, I went to work, actually, for the Great Northern Railway in Minnesota. And that's where I realized I have to come back. This is so different from what I was used to, and so extremely beautiful. I found the Middle Western landscape. I still do.
Yeah.
Probably the most interesting in this country, and a lot of people think about, talk about the seacoast, the mountains. But I love the Middle West.
Yeah.
And it's not all flat, as many people who don't know it will say.
Yeah. You mentioned the trains.
Yes.
And that's one of the things that has changed.
Yes, it certainly has. I just came back from New York on Amtrak, and it certainly has changed. The service is really terrible, and it's no longer a great joy to ride the trains, and it's great sadness to me because I hate to fly, and I always loved taking trains because I think it gives one a chance to look at the land, although it, it, but of great speed. It gives you the sort of whole sense of what's out there. And when the trains stop at the station, you have a chance to look. And I think my view of things has always been from when the train stopped, that frame of the window of the train became my frame on the world. And until last week when I came back from New York, always took the train. And when you're driving, you really don't have a chance, or shouldn't have a chance to look. My kids always used to say to me, "Now, Dad, you look, I'll drive," because I would be driving along and looking at the landscape, and when I was in the car, even when I travel the interstate highways to get to where I'm going, but when I always turn off at every single sign that says Business District or some little, the green signs with the studs on them that point to some village somewhere. I don't think I've ever passed up any of those. I must have traveled on most of the section roads in Iowa and Illinois and all over the Middle West.
Yeah.
You know, I love exploring this country out here.
Yeah. I suspect we don't get off the interstate very often.
Large part of my life doing this.
Yeah. I suspect we don't get off the interstate very often. We're very unlike you. So how aware do you think we are of what's happened, what's happening to the landscape?
Well, I wouldn't want to speak for all of us, but I certainly think that if you stick to the interstates, you will know what's happening to the land, because the interstates have caused such a change in our culture. I mean, so many towns are now on the interstate rather than downtown. But if you don't get off the interstates, you don't know what the towns are like. You don't know what the countryside is like. You don't have a chance to stop and talk to somebody. And so I'm a great section road driver. My car is very dusty. And, I find driving the interstates appallingly numbing. And I don't think you have, when you see these signs for these places, and all of these, the interstates bypass everything. And, I've always felt that if you want to understand this country, you better get out and you better go down to the small towns and you better go and talk to the farmers and you better go and talk to the people who live there. And everything I've done, I've always tried to not come with a preconception. I've always tried to come with trying to discover what these places are like, whether they be towns or whether they be lake boats or anything.
Yeah. Well, tell us about a town by the name of Guernsey, Iowa. Tell us about the Victorian Hotel Brooklyn and Kay Lawson.
Oh, the Hotel Brooklyn. Well, when I was teaching at the University of Iowa, I made Iowa City sort of one of my centers. I did a book on Iowa called A Sense of Place. And while I was out there, I would always, and I'd find these little places around. And I would go back and back and back until I got to know the people who lived there and the people who owned the hotels and things. So I would actually go in and they trusted me after a while. So I went to see Kay Lawson one day, and I asked her if I could photograph the rooms in the hotel. And she said, "Oh, certainly." And, I told her I was teaching at the university and what I was doing. And so I went upstairs, and I spent, probably 4 or 5 hours photographing two or three rooms up there, fascinating places. There was a bathroom where someone had painted a mural. A man who was an itinerant barn painter had come through quite a number of years before, and for room and board, he painted murals in each of the rooms, the bedrooms, and the bathroom. And this was the only one left. And I got so intrigued with this that finally Kay's daughter came up and said, "Mom wants to know if you're all right." So I and my wife Sandra and I went out 2 years ago to see the hotel, to visit again. We rang the bell, and it took a long time for anyone to answer, and Kay came down, and She showed us around, but she was obviously quite blind. But she insisted that she knew her way around, and that she said she remembered who I was. I don't know that she did, but whether she did or not, she was terribly, terribly cordial. And she showed us around the hotel, which had completely changed. The bathroom was still there, but the other rooms had been completely changed. It was no longer a hotel. She said that the insurance people had come by and told her to rip the ivy off the walls on the outside because they were fire hazard. And she said then she thought it was time to stop, to close up shop, which was too bad. But it was still, I mean, the hotel was still there, the building was still there, but it obviously, I don't know how much longer it's going to be there, and whether she's still with us, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as Guernsey goes, well, I took a group of students from the university out there one day, and we came upon Marion Bostian's garage, and it was this wonderful place with old cars he was repairing, and just a wonderful small town place that, you know, I remember this as a kid. You know, there was always a place like this in Putney, where I grew up in Vermont. And in all towns, it was this wonderful garage where people would know how to fix a car. I mean, Marion was a mechanic. He wasn't an extension of the parts department. Obviously, he knew what he was doing. And we spent the day there photographing and talking to him. And so when I went back last summer, summer 2004, I went back to Guernsey, and there was nothing there. Just a shell of a building. And I remember that he had a little sign on next to the cash register that said that I'd rather be fishing. And I thought to myself, well, maybe, Marion, you are fishing somewhere, but you're not here anymore. And the experiences of these kind of places like Marion's have become commonplace to me. It's very, very, very sad. And that's really the reason why I did this book.
Yeah. We have a listener waiting to talk with us. Let's go and talk with this individual in Eureka, Illinois, on line 4. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. A very interesting program. I love rural Iowa, and I love you here reminiscing and describing the places. I have two short questions. One of them comes from the columnist of the Chicago Tribune, Bob Green, who is, if I remember the thesis of it correctly, is that the interstate highway system has really changed America, perhaps more than about any other factor, including television and economic growth, because of the ways you were describing it, that it has kind of shifted the focus of economic growth in a lot of America. And yet, as you describe it too, it makes a lot of America bypass some of the most interesting areas and kind of, I don't know what word to use, maybe homogenized, kind of flattened out America. How would you respond to that?
I couldn't agree with you more. I think it has.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you drive along the highway and you come to all of these standard signs that we know everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the sort of clusters at the interchanges. And, you know, you could be anywhere. There is no individuality.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the interstate highway, I mean, when you think about it, I mean, there's a place I teach in Michigan, and there's a place that I go by on the way to Michigan. It lies just east of South Haven. And when I first started teaching there, there was one ice cream parlor. Today, on the interstate highway, there has grown up an entire town, if you could call it that. I mean, the Walmart, and there are a couple of gas stations, and there are all kinds of outlets, and there's stores. And downtown South Haven is drying up.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't tell you the number of places that I know, including the town that I grew up in, Vermont, where essentially there isn't any store in downtown Putney that sells anything that you'd really want. They're all sort of antique stores or some things that sell God knows what, baskets from who knows where.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to buy anything, you have to go to the next big town, Brattleboro, And if you go into Brattleboro, you don't go into downtown Brattleboro. You pull off the interstate, and there are all the stores right there, mm-hmm. right next. All of the supermarkets and everything right by the interchange.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's not only has it changed the whole culture of rural America, but it's also in places like Vermont devastated the land.
Mm-hmm. I think an interstate highway takes up, what, like 20 acres of land per mile or something. I had a cousin that was working on land use one time for our denomination. But that's sort of it, and it almost sounds like a variation of Friedman's book, The World is Flat, but that's because of what the interstates have done. Leads me to my second question, and I don't know if I read about it in Parade. We were talking about, trying to describe it, the depopulation of the Great Plains from, say, northern Texas to the Dakotas, but I suppose it could be a metaphor for a good deal of rural America, and I guess the answer is a no-brainer, but I suppose you have observed this, too, in Iowa, maybe other places, that when this particular article said that some counties in the Great Plains were losing one-third of their population, but that seems to me maybe it's a variation of the same thing.
Well, I think it is. I just came back. I spent a good deal of time this summer in the Dakotas, particularly North Dakota. And I've been back and forth to North Dakota a great deal. But this summer when I went back, there were places, I mean, there were more abandoned grain elevators than I'd ever seen before.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. And more towns that had been turned really ghost towns. And you would drive for miles, never see a car, never see anybody. Of course, you'd come to the places where they were mining coal. Well, it's very different.
Mm-hmm.
But in deep rural North Dakota, you could drive for miles and not see a car. And you would pass abandoned place after abandoned place. It was very, very, very different and very, very sad.
But you know, and I think it's sad because so many of those people are like you described. They're just salt of the earth people. And they're probably as honest as the day is long. And the skills they bring, like the guy, the mechanic, he knew how to fix a car, and he wasn't trying to sell you any parts. But
that's right.
And he'd do it honestly. Thank you very much.
Well, thanks
for the call. Thanks
nice
for the
to
call.
Talk to you.
This is the Afternoon Magazine, and our guest this afternoon is photographer David Plowden. His latest book is A Handful of Dust, Photographs of Disappearing America, the publisher W.W. Norton. And if you're interested in looking at his photographs, perhaps you're in front of a computer right now, perhaps you're listening to this program online, look for davidplowden.com, P-L-O-W-D-E-N. That will give you a sense of the landscape and the changes in the landscape that we've been talking about here this afternoon on the program. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, you're invited to join us this afternoon with questions, comments, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. Our guest, David Plowden, is the author of more than 20 books. His photographs have appeared in many exhibitions and periodicals and are held in major collections throughout the U.S. Mr. Plowden, who makes his home in Winnetka, has held several teaching positions. He taught at the Illinois Institute of Technology from 1978 to 1986. He also taught at the University of Iowa. Let's talk about grain elevators. Once upon a time, they were the heart of a rural community. And when you were getting close to a town, you knew it because you'd see the elevator on the horizon. In this book, A Handful of Dust, there are so many photographs. There are several photographs of abandoned elevators. What are these? What happened?
Well, one owner of an abandoned grain elevator in South Dakota said, you know, we've got a small siding beside the railroad. And he said, the trains don't stop unless they can put 50 cars on a siding. We can only hold 10. And he said, you know, everybody drives to the big grain elevators today. And the small town grain elevator like ours, he said, we can't get the trains to stop to pick the grain up. So we're going to go out of business. We just serve locally. We have a truck come in here and a truck from there, and we just serve a very local area. But he said, we can't, we're not going to be able to make it. And I think this is you're right. I mean, the grain elevators were the sort of heart and soul of the small prairie town. And I have always loved grain elevators. But, you know, it's one of the things that I photographed for years and years and years. And you know the great architect, Le Corbusier, said that the grain elevator gave every town its own skyscraper. And it does. And it's already marked. I mean, I've so many times driven across Kansas, and there you look and you see one little town with a grain elevator, and then off, as soon as you pass out, you see another one, and they are the landmark of the Middle West. No question about it. And I think it's terribly sad to see, again, it's part of the same thing that the small farms are going out of business, the towns are going out, small towns are drying up, and with them, the grain elevator. And, of course, when I did this book, I had to photograph the grain elevators, because I've been photographing grain elevators for years. I love grain elevators. I think they're one of the most important structures in this country. You know, you go to New England, and you have the small white congregational church, all right? You come to the Middle West, and you have, well, obviously, the churches, but you have the grain elevator as being sort of the center of the town. And when I was teaching at the University of Iowa, I got to know several people who ran the grain elevators. They were the centerpiece of the town, and I got to know all the farmers in the area because they all came. And I also never really mastered the game of sheep's head, but I tried because everybody was sitting around playing sheep's head while the trucks were being filled. And they indeed were the center. And I went back to one town, Victor, Iowa, which I remember very well, which is a town that I spent 2 years in when I was photographing, when I was teaching at the University of Iowa. And I went back to Bostedt's grain elevator feed mill, where I spent so many hours and tried to learn sheep's head. And it was abandoned, totally abandoned. Just nothing but weeds and things growing up. It's in the book.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, it was one of the saddest moments, because I remember spending 2 years there with Ted and all the people that worked with him. And I find a tremendous sadness in this book, because so many of these places I did know when they were active and useful and part of the community and part of our culture. And certainly the grain elevator is not only a monumental structure, but some of these beautiful, I think they're very beautiful. I had an editor once who said, oh, I'm so sick and tired of seeing those pictures of those dreadful, ugly, awful grain silos. Well, I think they're among our great indigenous architecture. And I hate to see them. I mean, certainly in North Dakota last summer, I mean, it was just staggering to me how many of them have been, the small ones had gone, as in Kansas. The big ones are there, but the little tiny ones, just like the towns, have disappeared.
Yeah. We've got a couple of other listeners waiting to talk with you, so let's go next to a listener in Urbana on line one. Hi.
Hi. I just have a comment for Mr. Plowden. I'm talking about the book, An American Chronology, where there's a lot of photographs from this area, and there's a paragraph in the book where Mr. Plowden had gone to Gilman and had gone into the newspaper office and met my father, George Elliott, and his comment was that they talked for a while, and he didn't take my father's picture because he thought they were like equals, and I just wanted him to know how much I always appreciated that. My father since passed away, but I was recently able to get a copy of this book so I can have that.
Did you send me an email about this?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, I did.
Did I answer you?
Well, I don't think so.
It's terrible. I've been away, and I've been working so madly on another book that I have a stack of emails that come in that I don't think I've answered, and if I haven't, I do apologize.
Oh, that's
because
okay.
Because I was very touched by that.
Yeah, no, and, you know, you may have written back, and who knows, I might have thought it was some some other mail or something, but...
the trouble with email.
Yeah. But I just, my whole family has just always appreciated that, and many friends, too.
Isn't that nice? Well, I meant that very seriously.
Yeah. Well, that's great. Great. And I'm looking forward to seeing your new photographs.
Well, you're very nice to call.
And
it was so nice of you to send me the email. I really mean it.
Oh, well, thank you very much. All right. Well, good luck.
Thank you. You too.
Next, we talk with a listener in Indiana on line 4. Hi.
Hello. It's certainly nice to come across somebody that has a similar aesthetic about the Midwest. You may be the first, in a sense, starting to capture what's happened, but the photography. I've always hoped that somebody would rise out of the Midwest to write a poem about the whole thing, rather large structured poem or a novel, as far as that goes. I guess my comment is, when I first started hearing this, is that, gosh, here's one of those fellows. I don't run across him too much. I have a buddy that's does a lot of things like you do in terms of driving around and photography and stuff. I've always wanted to go from where I am here in Indiana out far as west as I could just on county roads. And I got as far as into Illinois one time and finally had to give it up because I didn't consider buying gasoline in small places, which no longer have gasoline.
That's right.
Due to those wonderful state and federal roads that go over your head. So sort of a dream there got shattered in some ways, but I still think about it a lot. And just wanted to thank you for bringing back some old memories that on my days and the nights out on those county roads looking at things. And I also have to agree about silos.
They're wonderful, these county roads. Well, I hope you find a way of stopping at one of these interstate places, fill up, drive off the road, go county road, roading or whatever you want to call it, and come back and fill up at an interstate. So nice to hear you, share this with me, because it certainly is one of my great pleasures.
Yeah, mine too. Well, thanks a lot. Oh, hopefully get a hold of your book, because from just the way you're talking, I'm sure the photography is excellent. But thanks a lot. Another excellent program also. Thank you. Bye.
Well, thank you for calling.
Thanks for calling in. David, I'm going to take another call here in just a moment.
Yes.
But the pictures, the photographs, I don't know whether to describe them as sadly beautiful or beautifully sad.
Well, maybe they're both.
Maybe they're both.
Because I tried to make them as eloquent as possible.
Hmm.
I tried, I'm very sad. They were very sad places, particularly the houses, the homes. And, they are sad. To me, they are very sad. But then there's a beauty sometimes in sadness. And to me, it's very important as a photographer to make the most beautiful photograph I can make. I mean, sort of bound to do that. I mean, you as a photographer, the aesthetics mean a tremendous amount to me, obviously.
Yeah.
But the subject matter,
yeah,
being what it is, obviously. These are not pictures that would make you laugh, I think. And I think that the subject matter probably determined how they look and how I felt.
Yeah. I want to share a sentence or two from your introduction where you wrote, "Screens and kitchen doors were in tatters. In the stillness, one could imagine the voices of children playing. The barns were gone to rack and ruin. Gaunt reminders of when there were cats drinking warm milk from a cracked dish in the corner, and where in the winter the windows were always steamy from the warmth within."
So these are things that I remember as a kid. And I remember the barns, and I remember, there's always a cat. Right, and in the winters it was cozy, it was wonderful, and there was a sort of munching of cows and the activity in the barn. And you go into these barns today, and they're absolutely still. And they're dead. I mean, there's no life in there, and there are cobwebs, and there always were cobwebs in barns, but I mean, it's a very different place, and it's, to me, it's infinitely sad. And also, I was always really quite scared in a way, because I felt that I was intruding on a place that where life had been.
Mm-hmm.
There was still the sort of ghosts and the memories there, and there were some places that really frightened me, to be honest with you, and particularly those houses.
Yeah. Well, and when I look at those photographs that you made of the houses, I can imagine photographs made decades earlier where members of the family were out on the porch.
Yes.
Having their photograph taken, and what an occasion that would have been.
That's so true. And you know, a century ago, I mean, people did want to be photographed. And small-town photographers' studios were filled with photographs of people who came to be photographed, or they went out to the house, or somebody with a camera had everybody line up,
mm-hmm.
family reunion. And it was something to be very proud of. And the houses in these pictures were always places which you knew people cared about. And to see them go to rack and ruin like this is just so hard to see. And every time I would go to one of these places, I would always spend a lot of time trying to remember what reconstruct what it was like. And you know, for some reason, it's the screen door, because I guess my mother and I we had a kitchen door in Vermont, and you know, I'd come running in as a kid and I'd always bang the door, and my mother would say, for heaven's sakes, will you please stop banging the door? So the banging of a screen door takes me way back, and I guess it's one of the things that I remember very much. Doors, you know, to general stores with the bell and the screen doors of a kitchen, all these things are part of that era. And but those porches with the family lined up on them,
mm-hmm.
and you're right. I mean, they were very proud, and they represented the sense of family, which I think is in so many cases has been lost.
Let's talk with another listener. Let's go to Effingham now. Listener on line two. Hi.
Hi. Yeah, I just want to comment. I was a great lover of the prairie, too, and I was just wondering, did he ever go to eastern Montana? Because that's another place where a lot of the elevators and the old towns are just non-existent anymore, and it's just really peaceful when you go out there. And I was just wondering if he did.
Yes, I have. I've spent a lot of time in eastern Montana, places like Culbertson, which is a little town, well, it's practically on the border of North Dakota. It's probably 50 miles in from there. Plenty Wood, Antelope, all these towns right on the very northeastern edge of Montana. And then there's that road that runs from Lewistown all the way across to, I guess it's Glendive, where you go across an area which is what must be 200 and some odd miles, there are probably two gas stations along the way. At least they were when I drove it. Yes, and it's empty, and there are these grain elevators that suddenly appear, and it's beautiful, lonely, and I guess today when you talk about this, I have not been back there for many years, but I did spend a couple of weeks in a place called Culbertson. I got to know everybody who was there, all the farmers, and the man who called himself the last blacksmith in northeastern Montana. And it was this beautiful country, beautiful, and there were some really eloquent, wonderful places that I guess are no longer there. There was a wonderful old grocery store in Culbertson, which I have a feeling is not there. And I made friends with a farming family named Beck. And I've been in touch with all of the generations of that family up until, I mean, still in touch with them, because we made friends and we corresponded for years. And when Carsten Beck, the patriarch of the family, died, I sent pictures of him to all members of his family when he had his funeral. And I wrote a letter to the family remembering that he took us in, my first wife and my kids and I, and took sort of we were under his wing. We were out there in Culbertson, and I remembered that I wrote a letter to his family, which they read at his funeral, because I remembered so many of the things that he had done. And this is one of the things that I remember so fondly about this country, you know, that people take you in. They trust you.
Right.
And very different from living in New York, for instance. And it's one of the things that appeals to me, not only the great, wonderful countryside, but the people who live there.
Yeah, and I'll make one more comment. And as far as I'm concerned, there's probably nothing more beautiful on a moonless night, clear night in the middle of a prairie where there ain't no lights at all, and you just star up there, and just it's unbelievable what a person can actually see. I mean,
you can see the stars, can't you?
Yeah, even in a small town where I'm at, if you look up, it's, you know, everybody says, oh, it's stars, but it ain't like when you're in the middle of Kansas or Montana or South Dakota or North Dakota and look up, and it just... unbelievable.
It is unbelievable. I've done that. I used to camp when I traveled back and forth across the country a lot. I'd camp, and I'd always sleep out in the fields so I could look at the stars. And it's just, you know, I live in north of Chicago now, and the lights of Chicago obliterate the sky at night. And, but boy, it's, I know what you're talking about.
Mm. Let's. I want to thank that gentleman for talking with us this afternoon. Next, we're going to go to a listener in Champaign on line one. Hi.
Hi. Yeah, I grew up in Kansas, and I was just going to say, I think it is really sad we're losing our rural heritage, and part of that, though, I feel like it's you know, we're to blame because we, the American public, we don't. Put pressure on the government for things like trains, which I think are wonderful. They're much better than the interstates as far as, you know, cross-country public transportation and things. We, you know, people, we support places like Walmart and McDonald's rather than going to the small, you know, locally owned businesses. And so I think it's really sad, but in some ways, you know, we don't have anybody to blame but ourselves because we haven't, we're not trying to do things to get the government and to get the public to try and protect these types of this heritage.
Well, I have to agree with you. I think we are to blame. We seem to want it another way, and yet it's so interesting, isn't it, that we preserve these things as historic sites, and we put up, you know, artifacts. How many farming communities do you go to and you find an old tractor or an old tedder or an old side delivery rake or something, you know, that's been saved? So, you know, we have this nostalgic feeling about these things. We realize they're going, but you're right. I mean, we do go to Walmart, and we do go to these places. I don't know whether we would go to Walmart if Walmart, you know, if we had another choice. But the trouble is that Walmart is indeed driving everything else out of business. I mean, as you well know, and I think probably.
Yes, but if one day everybody just said we're not going there for the next three weeks,
maybe you have to start a movement to do this. I mean, there are places that don't want Walmart, and they do stand up and say no, we don't want them. There are several places that I can think of where they said no, we don't want it. We do not want them to come in here. We have a community, and we don't want our community wrecked.
Right.
But I think they're few and far between.
And it's interesting, the part you brought up about the genericness of all the places along the interstate, because so many of my European friends, I've ridden a lot of the trains in Europe, and so many of the people that come from over there to here and visit, the thing that they're amazed by is how generic our country looks, that every town looks the same as the next. There's all the individuality and the uniqueness was disappearing.
Well, it has, and I think that's one of the things, you know, even on Main Street, people have this idea, the storekeepers and everything else, which is perfectly, you know, I'm not blaming them, they're trying to keep up to date. They're trying to look, you know, they put all these new facades on. They're trying desperately to appeal to this modernization and this feeling that they must be up to date, otherwise people wouldn't come. And how many beautiful main streets have you seen? Used to be absolutely lovely, with the lovely old buildings and everything else, that have been absolutely wrecked. And it's very sad, because it's an ill-advised way of trying to say we're modern, we're up to date, we're up keeping up with the times. And I think that, you know, maybe if they did things like the town of Cazenovia, New York, where the merchants decided they weren't going to do that, and they restored the buildings, and they look beautiful. Mm-hmm. They're just the way they, you know, just the way they were. The town of Albia in Iowa, as you may know, was a man who came out there from California. It was his hometown. And he decided that he would restore the town. And there are places, there are people who are doing this. They're few and far between. But there are places where people have drawn the line in the sand and said, no, I'm sorry, we're going to save our heritage. We're not going to destroy everything. And I think that we should encourage more of those. I think it's an uphill battle. And I think you can't possibly fight the interstate highway culture. But there are places that are able to somehow or other survive off to the side because of the community. And it's up to the community. If the people want it, it'll happen. If the people want the interstate highways and Walmart more than they want to preserve the neighborhoods, then it'll go that way. And you're right, it is up to us.
We've got two more listeners waiting to talk with us. Let's go next to a listener in Belgium on line four. Hi.
Good afternoon. I'd like to just suggest a topic for your guest here that might be short. When was the last time you saw an outhouse in the community, the area where we're at, where there used to be a lot of them all the time? I think I know of one left. And obviously, they're not in use anymore. They're pretty much outlawed. But there used to be some very unique outhouses that used to dot the Midwest countryside that was memorable to many people. Thank you very much.
All right. I don't know. I mean, the last time I saw one that was in use was in West Virginia.
Last time I saw one was in Colorado.
Well, I'm just as glad as I have to confess that we have modern plumbing.
And I'll tell you, going out to that outhouse in Colorado on a blustery spring night was not a picnic.
No, it's not.
No, and I'll
sure not.
And I said to my friend, I'll never make fun of a fur-covered toilet seat again. So
I don't blame you.
Brr.
No, everybody thinks, you know, some people say, Plowden, you're an old Luddite. And I say, no, I'm not. I use the computer. I like plumbing.
Yeah.
Modern medicine keeps me alive. You know, I have all kinds of conditions, and including a bad heart. If it weren't for modern medicine, I probably wouldn't be talking to you.
Yeah. I will say, though, that going outside in the morning on a beautiful spring morning and pulling back the blanket and just sitting there and enjoying Mother Nature was also a great thing, though, too.
Well, so. I think you're right. I mean, I think we lose that. I think we lose that. Yeah. We're always in a hurry.
Yeah.
We always have been. And I guess that's one reason why the interstate highway appeals to us.
Yeah. Let's get in one more call here before we have to wrap up, and we'll have to be really quick because I'm pushing the limit here.
Okay.
Line three, a listener in Urbana. Hi.
Hi. About Walmart, the city of Sturgeon Bay, Wisconsin, 5 or 6 or 7 years ago, fought Walmart up there, and it's a fishing and farming community, and north of Green Bay on the little.
I know exactly where it is.
Okay, they fought it and fought it and fought it, and they don't have a Walmart.
Well, you
by
see
golly,
that?
That must have been 5 or 8 years ago, or 10 maybe. But and nobody wanted it, and course, the small town merchants didn't. Walmart is back again, and they're still fighting it. Now, here in Urbana and Champaign, we have three of them, and they're out in the farming communities, the farmland. And in Urbana, we fought it, and by golly, they're out in Urbana and plowed up the corn land and great big lines of cars to their gasoline pumps. I avoid Walmart like the plague. I'd go 20 miles to not use a Walmart.
Well, I wish there were more people like you. If there were, maybe Walmart wouldn't be so successful.
Mm. Well, there we have to leave it. We're out of time. David Plowden, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Well, thank you. It was a great pleasure. I really mean it. Celeste, it's been a pleasure to be here, and I appreciate so much your giving me the time to talk.
You're very welcome. Take care.
You too.
And maybe we'll see you one day on the road.
Who knows?
Who knows? Photographer David Plowden has been our guest in this portion of the Afternoon Magazine.